We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number 3 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson, and we are elated to have you join us in our podcast environment. We have another fierce female champion among champions with us today. Cheryl's social justice and STEM lens is impacting our earliest learners to our adult learners. So who is Cheryl Ney? Dr. Ney has been an academic administrator at the California State University, Los Angeles for over 10 years, the last 5 as Dean of the Charter College of Education. She has served in the role of academic administrator also at California Polytechnic University at San Luis Obispo and at Capital University in Columbus, Ohio. With a doctorate in biochemistry from the University of Chicago in 1986, she comes to the work of educator preparation as a STEM educator herself, having taught undergraduates for over 20 years at Capital University in Columbus, Ohio. She is active in California's Link Learning arena, and her scholarship is in the area of gender and science. Since 1994 to 1995, she has served as the National Science Foundation Distinguished Visiting Professor in Women in Science at the University of Wisconsin System.
Wow, Dean Ney is clearly one of our heroes in education. And Dean, each week we explore models of leadership together, from what our guests see in the mirror, in other words, reflections of themselves, mentors who have impacted them, and then considering that mirror and your mentors, we're going to turn to movements we should all be watching that inspire or ignite maverick moments. It is our honor roll pattern of M.
And Keisha, don't forget, we want to catch any edge babble we use to make sure our listening community connects with what is being said. And I caught one while I was introducing Cheryl. Linked learning. Dean Ney, can you tell us a little bit more about linked learning and describe what it is for our listeners?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Linked learning is a very innovative, cutting-edge initiative in the state of California to link applied learning with theoretical learning, or in the language of high school, is to link the graduation curriculum for high school students to career and tech ed. So you hear about it in schools that have a theme, like an engineering academy or a health academy. This is where students are learning their basic skills, English, math, science. They're learning it in the context of the theme of the academy. And I think we all know as educators, there's nothing better than applied learning. So this is a very, very exciting initiative happening across the state.
Thanks, Cheryl, for that incredible definition. I've heard that term before in some of my work, but now I have a much better understanding of what it means and what it represents. Now let's start with the first M models. Dr. Ney, who are your role models and why?
I really feel strongly that my strongest influence and the person I looked up to the longest is a department chair, a chemistry department chair who hired me when I got out of graduate school in 1986. And she hired me into a small department of 6 people, 3 of whom were women. So to start your academic career in the hard sciences in a department that was 50% female was truly a great opportunity. And really it came about because of this woman. So I'm talking about my mentor, Dr. Kathleen Schuler Richardson. She was an immigrant from Vienna when she was a small child. She got a PhD from Harvard in chemistry in 1969. So she was a pathbreaker. And the thing about her was, I mean, super smart. Had a book that in organic chemistry that was international, had 7 editions, all kinds of languages. I mean, she was a super smart person, but she was the warmest person I've ever met. Didn't matter if you were a college president or you were the person who was doing her gardening. She was the most warm person. And so I feel lucky to have met somebody who was really an amazing person. And she had a fabulous sense of humor too. So you have to add that in.
You've shared a lot about this amazing mentor, and you mentioned that you really wanted to do this podcast in honor of her. So how did she mentor you? And in turn, how does this assist you with how you mentor others?
Yeah, well, she was mentoring me into the life of a science faculty member. Probably the best part of it was she was leading by example, but we built such a relationship of trust that, you know, she could give me the feedback that I needed, both positive and negative. And I think that really offered me an opportunity to grow into the role of a faculty member in chemistry in the sciences in the late 80s.
Oh, my goodness. She sounds like an amazing person. I can't imagine being mentored by such a strong lady. When you look in the mirror, when did you look in the mirror and know you were a leader, that you were going to be like your mentor?
Okay, well, I'm going to answer that in 2 ways. One, I'm a DNA biochemist by training, so genetics is very interesting to me. And one time I was at a professional conference that was just uncovering how traits go across a pedigree. So you might in a family have an uncle and a cousin, and you have a cancer, for example. And that it was an early observation. And when I heard this, I thought back to one of my ancestors, who actually is Marshall Ney of Napoleonic fame. And I had done some reading about Marshall Ney, and he apparently, they say, led the rear guard out of Moscow on the strength of his personality. And so in some ways I feel sometimes, I hark back to him and being in a cold winter in Moscow and having an army that's nearly defeated, and on the strength of your personality, you lead them out, right? Enough people survive to tell this story. Sometimes I feel like him. So in part, I feel like understanding my genetics was a moment when I understood my leadership abilities. Mm. And then I think back to my growing up, and you know, I was always the organizer in the neighborhood of the children. So we had great summers in our backyard in Michigan when everybody from around the block would come down to our house, and I'd be leading Red Rover, will you please come over, and all kinds of games that we used to play in the neighborhood. So it's probably an unusual answer I've given you, but it was there.
Well, clearly you have been an organizer, and you've been helping to organize and recognize organizers on the east side of Los Angeles. You've been a big champion for social justice. And they say that a social movement that only moves people is merely a revolt. A movement that changes both people and institutions is a revolution. You've been part of some serious revolutions, and I want to know more about how do you see women changing this world and your impact in this world?
Let's see. I'm almost 65, so I have lots to reflect on. And I think that what I see over the course of my lifetime is that women have paved the way for people to truly be authentic leaders and to be values driven. So, you know, I'm in higher education, and the culture is quite structured, and, you know, being different is not always best, right? So it took me a long time to come into my own in terms of understanding that really my strength is as a values-driven leader. And so what I love seeing in today's world is women in leadership positions who are truly being authentic, who are truly values-driven, who value the people in their organization. People more than strategic plan, right? This is where excitement is happening, at least I think in higher education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so glad that you kind of called out the structure for higher education. I think, you know, Frances and I both started in K-12 and then transitioned to higher education. And that's one of the things that created a learning curve for each of us, was that we thought we were living in structure until we went to higher ed. And then the immense structure that is there was just incredible. And, you know, a lot of people have disrupted that system. A lot of women have disrupted that system. Many of them in the state of great state of California.
Yes.
Are there any mavericks or maverick ways of disturbing the system that you're watching or that others should watch?
Well, I feel pretty strongly about this idea about being values driven, right? So when I see it, I now can recognize it and want to follow it. So I'm even thinking in this particular moment of Kamala Harris, who just has such a lovely, authentic persona when she's out in public, which I know must really drive her work as well. So I really am trying to watch and encourage these folks who really have this authenticity and this connection to the people that they're working with.
Yeah, these values and this sense of authenticity you model each and every day. And so much of this is also about how we take care of ourselves as women and as humans in general. And I know that your university has had a lot of really strong initiatives around self-care and around mindfulness in particular. And so maybe share with us a little bit about how you personally engage in that work and what your system is doing to help leaders like yourself in your own practice.
All right. So on our campus, this is called Mind Matters. And it embraces ideas from the field about how you take care of yourself as a whole person. It's been primarily focused on students, but the faculty have really appreciated the concept. And so they have stepped in also to work with each other on thinking about how you get a balanced life as you work in higher education. So for myself, I try to promote this in my team, my faculty and staff. And as an individual, it helps a lot if you're saying to people, you need to do this, right? Then you got to go do it, because they're going to say, you can't just say this, you got to show us how you're doing it. So for me, first of all, saying it out loud to other people gives me the motivation to really take care of myself. So right now, under the pandemic conditions, I feel like the two big things are meditation, and I have an urban garden. And it's that urban gardening, which is both, which gives me both meditation and grounds me.
Literally.
Yeah, wow. Right.
I love gardening too. That's really amazing. And I like your modeling expectations too. That's very powerful and speaks volumes to your character. So I have a question that is actually a little game we're getting ready to kind of move into. Can you finish this sentence for me? An event that changed my worldview.
Sure. It was when I was a graduate student on the south side of Chicago, at the University of Chicago, actually. And I somehow found a biography of a very important woman scientist. Her name was Barbara McClintock. She started doing work in the 30s that was not recognized till the 80s. And in the 90s, she was one of the few women to win the Nobel Prize. But it was how she did her work and reading about how she came to develop her sense, really her grounding in how she did her science, that was really just earth-shattering for me. I would describe her as an empathetic rationalist, which is, she had all the tools from Western science. She was well noted for being an excellent cytogeneticist, and her field of study was Indian corn. Which, you've ever looked at a cob of Indian corn, you see that every single kernel is different. And so she was very intrigued about what was going on at the molecular level with these kernels. And so she used her skill as a cytogeneticist to study more and more and more. But it wasn't until she did this switch in her way of knowing, which is, she knew so much about these corn plants and so much from her genetics work. She planted two crops of corn a year. So she herself put the seed into the ground, watched the corn grow, took the kernels off the cob, you know, did the genetics thing of putting it under the microscope and knew so much about the life of this organism that she began to empathize. She would put herself in her mind inside a cell of this corn and try to understand what was happening inside the cell to make the variegated color in the pattern. And of course, the way Western male science works is always from the outside. You stand at the outside and look in. And for her, she used these powers of empathy to imagine the mechanics on the inside of the cell and what was happening. And what she was able with that approach to theorize was that genes were jumping around in the genome. And this was a phenomenal idea because back in her time, DNA was the master molecule, right? It had all the attributes of male strength, right? So of course it had to be immutable. And it turned out that she was spot on. And the men in the field would laugh at her at conferences. And so finally she said, I'm not coming to your conferences anymore. I'm going out to Cold Spring Harbor Lab and I'll be there and you can check my work in the annual report, but I'm not standing up in front of you again to let you laugh at me. Because they just couldn't accept the fact that their immutable DNA was actually mutable. And it turned out, of course, in the 80s, people began to corroborate her theory. And then she was awarded the Nobel Prize in the 1990s. So when I read this about how she was doing her work, it just changed my world, that I was not going to be the typical white male scientist working from the outside. It's always from the inside. And so that idea of empathy, of course, we use it with people all the time, but now this shows us that we can actually be empathetic with inanimate objects and really come to understand their makings by empathizing with them. I love it. Don't you love that?
I do. I think everyone needs to hear that story of really going inside, and what a remarkable story of empathy and learning about it in a new way. Gosh, you know, Keisha, I still have one of those sentence starters too. I'm getting so intrigued by these stories. So Cheryl, I'm wondering if you can answer this one. I became a stronger person after?
I guess I want to say when I met my husband, and after 10 years when we got married and built a life together, because it turns out he's an operating engineer. So he's very practical minded, right? And of course I was living in the world of theory and higher education. So to start seeing a world through his lens, being empathetic to understand that worldview, really helped me broaden, I think, my approach. And so I think in the end, it made me a stronger person to be able to combine this stuff with actually, you know, putting your hands and fingers and seeing things. It's been a great experience.
I bet you have interesting conversations too. I bet that's the combination of your backgrounds, I bet, has made for really engaging conversations throughout your years together.
It reminds me that I need to invite both Frances and you, Keisha, to come visit us when we're finished with the pandemic.
Yes.
My husband runs the hydrogen research and refueling station here on campus. Because I'm a test tube person. But to go into this little plant and see how on a large scale they're taking water and busting it apart to make hydrogen and oxygen, it's just, and it's so understandable about water, H2O, breaking into hydrogen and oxygen. So I'm inviting you to come out and see
that.
Oh
my goodness, I can't wait. I'm going to book my tickets while they're still $15.
Yes, there we
so
go.
So I can be sure to get out there.
Bring some mentees.
Yeah. Okay, I have one more it finished this sentence. My life improved when I
would say that my life improved when I finally leaned in and embraced my leadership style. For years and years and years, I tried to be the stereotype of an academic leader in the 20th century, which is to be very metrics driven, at least you know, in the initial days when data was coming out, you know, everybody just thought that it should guide everything, right? And so, you know, I tried to be like these other people who I was watching. And when I came into the College of Ed here at Cal State LA, I must say the community really embraced me. And that trust, again, helped me lean in to become the leader that I am. So there you go.
This is such a powerful story of empathy, of leaning in, of, you know, being a model and not a critic, and really putting the science behind one another's thinking. So I know I personally have learned a lot from this conversation today. And Keisha, I'm wondering, what are some of your takeaways from this conversation?
Well, I think we're in the presence of brilliance. And I know how, having a background in a hard science myself, I honestly, I was a little bit more intimidated than you, and I skirted over to a safer zone. So, which is teaching, which, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but you went head on, sister. You went head on into the research, into the theory, into the work. And I just, first of all, applaud that because of the time that you came into the field and did that. I know it wasn't easy. And I know there were a lot of barriers up. And I know, especially going into higher ed, there were not that many females in your department at the time. And so I feel like you've broken through so many ceilings, and you've just got so much energy and enthusiasm for your work. And I'm absolutely positive that you have brought a lot of other ladies into the sciences because of that. And I'm wondering, do you have any final thoughts you want to share with our audience, maybe even encouraging those who are following in your footsteps?
I think I would say that there's nothing like being a pay it forward person, right? That while we're helping others, and, you know, people say, well, why are you helping me? I say, because I want you to pay it forward, right? So I think that idea about pay it forward is really an important one to give us, right, over time, this network that extends across time and space, right? So pay it forward. That's my last word.
We can't thank Cheryl enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of time with us, sharing her story and wisdom.
And I'm wondering what our listeners are reflecting on right now. How might you inspire and mentor the next generation of women in STEM?
Don't forget to put your answer into Twitter following the hashtag TLHonorROLE, so that we can see what your answers are and share them with the world. You know, we can't thank Cheryl enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of time with us, sharing her story and wisdom.
And that's right, Keisha. We want you to know that we appreciate you and appreciate our fierce listeners who are leading with this message of inspired leadership.
So please join us for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight another Shero in education and explore their M's. Until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Francis Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor ROLE.